gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Bacon Smiles podcast, episode number 55. Wow, we have done a lot of these.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. But as always, I'm Steve Patera, joined by my good friend
Evan Shaw Mumford.
Yeah. All right. So before we get into the show breakdown, we want to do a couple little short shout-outs real quick. Mm-hmm. So, as many of you know, my good friend Matt Gruder passed away when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. Today actually would have been his 35th birthday. Mm-hmm. So, prayers to his family, and Matt, just know that we're thinking about you today. Happy birthday.
Amen.
My good friend Michelle, he is getting married tomorrow.
Nice.
So, many prayers for he and his fiance, soon-to-be wife, tomorrow.
Right.
So super pumped about that. Eva and I are going with Zoe to the wedding, so that'll be fun.
Great.
All right. But I saw a pretty cool article, and so we're going to get into school. The school year is about to start, and that means the end of the summer.
Right.
And summer jobs, whether you had them, I had them, and kind of did you work all year? So we're going to kind of get into that. Then I wanted to talk about, like, during the school year, groups, time management, that kind of stuff, the stuff that what we went through, you know, and kind of the difference between now and then and stuff, because we're super old.
Right. Yeah.
And then you got music. Gospel today is Matthew 22, 1 through 14. Mm-hmm. And St. Philip Benizi is our saint of the day. And then we got news of the weird.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, did you work a lot of summer jobs?
Did you have,
like, one that you did every summer?
Yeah, I had, when I was growing up, I did a lot of chores around my parents' house. And that was basically my way of earning my keep there.
Yeah, nice.
So that was kind of my summer job. And then once I was in my senior year in high school, that's when I got my first job. I was 17, working at Highland Park Market.
Highland Park here
in town, and so that was my first job, and I did that for 4 years. So and that was just a year-round.
Okay,
thing,
so you worked all through the school year,
produce and fruits and vegetables and all that.
So did you work only weekends or did you work nights?
It was expected that I worked one day of the weekend, and then I did 20 hours throughout the week.
Okay, cool.
So it was either Saturday or Sunday I worked. The other day I'd have off.
Nice. I got my first real summer job when I was 13 years old.
Okay.
I picked corn in East Hartford, right on the South Windsor East Hartford line. And it was horrible.
Yeah.
but basically, I worked from like midnight to noon a lot of days, mm-hmm. or right around noon. And so I got there at midnight to be part of the picking crew. And I would go out into a field, stand in a trailer, catching ears of corn coming off the tractor, and dump it in the trailer. And me and another guy would do that. And so we'd do that until like 4 in the morning. Then the rest of the counters would come, and then they'd count them all into bags of corn. So, and I did that until I was, like, 16, so, like, 3 summers in a row. And then when I was 16, I actually got my first, like, kind of, like, year-round job at Angelino's restaurant. It kind of just recently opened, like, 6 months before I turned 16. And I was a dishwasher. Then I was a busboy, and I kind of alternated between dishwasher and busboy. Then I was, like, a line cook in the kitchen. And then I had a bunch of jobs. I remember by the time I graduated from high school, I had worked at like 12 different places.
Wow.
And that was because I played a lot of sports and stuff. And so a lot of places wouldn't work around that. But I mean, I worked at CVS, Vernon Drug, which is another like pharmacy store, and DSW Shoes, Ann & Home Curtain Bath Outlet. I worked for my uncle's advertising company. Talland Monthly, which was a magazine that my uncle also helped put out. Uh-huh. Coventry Press, which was like a copy place. I worked at a ton of places. But I worked like as much as I could because I had to pay for my own car when I was 16, my own insurance, you know, all that. And it really helped me because, you know, I was able to save up money and pay for things myself. But I always had to have, like, a job.
Right.
And so even when I went to college, I had to have a job. But what got me on this topic was I saw a pretty staggering statistic, but it's not what you think once you hear it. So 40 years ago, 1978, the summer of 1978, 60 to 65% of teenagers, 16 to 19, had a summer job, had a job that they worked in all summer long. This past summer, or last summer, I think they took the statistics from, but 35% of teenagers had summer jobs. So that's a lot. That's like almost a 50% drop off. However, the number of not engaged in education or work, training or something like that, but so basically not engaged in some form of activity, because they basically said, don't think that the kids are lazier now, just think that they're doing something else. And so the number of teenagers enrolled in some kind of college preparatory program in the summers has skyrocketed, like quintupled. So over that course of time, I was curious, it didn't really go into it in the article that I saw, was, is that more of a, like, an opening? Like, did schools not really do that 40 years ago? Was the enrolling in school in, say, end of June, enrolling in college courses the end of June, was that really as big of a thing? Was the program as open as it is now, where school could, you know, really be year-round for you?
I haven't heard about that before. This is the first time I've heard about summer classes for college prep. But I remember when I was in my senior year in high school, that's when they first started offering college prep classes, at least at Manchester High School, where I did take a class or two where I knew that it would be transferred to Manchester Community College.
Yeah.
So that was great, knowing that, okay, I'm working this towards my diploma, but I'm also going to get a class or two out of the way at MCC.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing happened when I went to Central Connecticut. Because I had not enrolled in the college course, because I didn't think I was going to go to college because I was a terrible student. We've talked about this. I got one credit my freshman year in high school. Yay! Don't be like me. I really didn't think to even enroll, nor did I don't think my class ranking allowed me to enroll in the quote-unquote pre-college course load. But I took an accounting class in high school, and I really liked it, and so that's what I ended up going to college for. Funny story, my teacher of my accounting class in high school was a part-time professor at Central, and I took the exact same course at Central and did pretty well the second time.
I'm glad to hear it.
It'd be awful if I did terrible, wouldn't it?
Teachers start to feel self-conscious.
He didn't learn it the second time either. even in college, I had to work. That's actually how I do home theater installations for Best Buy as my current full-time job. And that's actually the job I got to help pay for school. And that's when I realized, like, me being in an office, I couldn't really see myself doing that. But I always had to have a job, you know. How about you when you were in college? What did you...
It was the same expectation. It was, I'm not going to be just going to classes and then bumming around at home.
Yeah.
My parents were saying, you got to have a job, you got to help pay bills, and you got to, you know, help with your car payments and all that.
Because
I had
something.
A car. My brother and I were sharing it. So it was pretty much an expectation around the house. Now, I did get an internship, which ended up leading to a job while I was in college.
Yeah.
So it was cool because then I could get... Hey, Buster. I could get experience in the degree that I was going for.
Yeah, yeah.
I was getting paid for that as well.
Yeah.
But I did that. I filled vending machines. That was probably the most
glamorous
job I had. Yeah. That was for a couple months.
Quit bragging.
I was working my way up the corporate ladder. But I worked there. I worked at the school library. Basically, I always had like at least two jobs.
Yeah.
And it worked out in some areas where, you know, if this was around 2008 when the economy wasn't doing well. So if place was laying people off, I always had one to fall back upon.
That's great. And that's what was funny is the reason I worked so many jobs was because I had such a full schedule.
Yeah.
In high school, of course. I mean, I played football. I was a peer minister, just like you were a peer minister. And it was tough trying to work around that schedule. My junior into my senior year, I was essentially working almost a full-time job down here at Suburban Subaru. I was a lot attendant. I would work 5 hours a day, the 5 days during the week. And then I would work like almost a 10-hour day on Saturdays. Maybe just an 8-hour day, but it felt like forever. Right. And so I worked that on Saturday.
Thanks, Buster.
Like breathing heavily.
The ADD is kicking in.
So I worked such a long day. But anyway, so I was trying to fit in peer ministry and football, and I ran track a couple of the years and all that stuff. And then also being a teenager, wanting to have some form of a social life.
Right.
And so it was a lot, you know? Yeah. And so that's where, like, nowadays, everything is so like jam-packed, and I notice with our young people in our church programs that they're so over-prioritized, like just like not prioritized but over-scheduled, and it's really hard to prioritize what to put out, to put first. And you know, we're supposed to put church and you know, church, family, you know, first.
Right.
And then so your relationship with God should be the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And that's really tough.
Right.
You know, even now as an adult with a daughter and a wife and everything, and I always need to remember that I shouldn't be just consumed with making my wife and my daughter happy. And I don't mean that. Trust me, I'm very much always worried about trying to make my wife and my daughter happy. But what I should be consumed with is God.
Yeah.
And then everything else will take care of itself. Like, my relationship with my wife will be better when my relationship with God is better. Mm-hmm. And your relationship in school, your relationship at work, like your actual life will be better when your relationship with God is better. And I've always found that to be the case, and I always find that I'm always like in the worst position when my relationship with God is waning from my side. It's not like God all of a sudden's like, I took a break.
Yeah.
You know, it's always when I'm not prioritizing God. Mm-hmm. It's always when I'm like, man, I've been off on my prayer life, you know, I've been off on my diligence to my relationship with God, that normally, like, I start to stress out more, and I start to, you know, notice things going wrong, or just really focusing on things that are going wrong, instead of being thankful for what is going well, and thankful for the job that I have, and, you know.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Like, I agree. I mean, my mom was recently talking about this with my sister and all her peers being overwhelmed with all their extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
My mom said, our rule at the house is always, and I had never really thought of this, but she said, is you can always do one thing for extracurricular. So I was involved in the music department at school. But she said, you can do one thing, but then it's also school. Mm-hmm. And if you have a job, then you gotta do the job too.
Absolutely.
But that way you're not overwhelmed by going, well, I'm a part of three clubs. I got to do the job. I got to do this. And then I got my school stuff that I got to fit in somehow.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I was always blessed that I didn't have to study as hard in high school. Like, so I was able to retain a lot of information without having to put a ton of time studying. So I never really understood those who had to really hit the books. And, yeah. and now looking back, I feel really like bad for them. Like not, you know, just saying like that's why they couldn't do as much other things. And it took me a long time to realize, you know, the different gifts that everyone has. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've had this conversation with you before, but I used to always struggle with people who weren't good at math, you know, in the sense where it's like, it's this, and here's how you get there. How do you not get this?
Right.
You know, know what I mean? And getting, like, almost frustrated when, like, a teacher would go over the same answer, like, the same equation 100 times. Like, you know, 2 times x + 6 = whatever, solve for x. And I'm like, here, it's this.
Yeah.
And then there's some people who are like, wait a minute, what do I have to do? Which way? Like, order of operations, this whole thing. And I'm always just like, or was like, come on.
Right.
It's this.
Well, I actually, at my job at Highland Park Market, I actually had a conversation with someone about that, because when I was in school, I actually got a 504, which is a learning disability thing, and I was embarrassed to share that with people when I was at school, like with the teachers and stuff, because it made me feel like I was less than adequate.
Oh, yeah, I know
but
that.
But then there were other areas where I'd somehow excel in. And so I was talking with one of my coworkers, and he went to school with a guy who was brilliant at learning different languages. He could go into the library during his lunch break, just open up a book, and just basically download all this information and be able to learn a whole language.
Wow.
But for some reason, he wasn't able to, he was socially awkward and unable to actually communicate with other people, and it made him severely depressed. And so
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So it really got us talking about how, you know, with our strong abilities in different areas.
Yeah.
He said this classmate of mine was really like a genius. But he also had these disabilities in different areas. So it was like,
absolutely.
That could mean that there are a lot more geniuses around us that we just don't know of, because we compare and go, oh, I'm better at this than you.
Absolutely.
But we don't take a moment to look at that other person's strength and go, wow, they're really good at that.
Well, the way that I was always equating it is like, I don't feel like I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
How is no one else getting this, like, this fast? But it's funny that you mentioned foreign languages. Like, I'm terrible at them. I always have been. And there'd be people who can pick up a second language just like that. And that was one of the things where it's like, man, that's something I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. And then you start to realize, I say it all the time, especially in my day job, it's like everyone has their specialty. Like, I know a lot about TVs and networks and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm good at that because that's what I do every day. But you know, my brother designs airplane engines. Like, I don't know anything about airplane engines.
Yeah.
We all have our specialty, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's always, we all have our gifts, and be thankful for the gifts that we have and use them, because God designed us the way we are for a particular reason. And you're supposed to use your gifts,
right?
You know, and appreciate them and know what they're for. Mm-hmm. And, so the one thing I wanted to kind of like wrap that whole thing up was it just remembering that when it comes to all the stuff that we do in life, whether it's work, whether it's school, whether it's friendships, whether it's everything, like I said before, just make sure that we're prioritizing our relationship with God, and that your commitment to your faith shouldn't be the lowest on the priority, you know?
Yeah.
And just let's make that, like, make that a priority going into this next school year for all our young people, for all of our adults, too.
Yeah.
Like, we may not have a school year unless you're a teacher. Unless you're, you know, a confirmation coordinator or confirmation teacher. We may not all have a school year. But going into this next season, let's make it a priority. Let's remember to have our daily prayer life, to have our Sundays, to go to Mass. Let's remember that, because it's so important.
Amen.
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 Music.
Yeah, speaking of skills, so we're looking ahead to September. Building 429 is coming out with a new project on September 7th. It's called Live the Journey. Lauren Daigle, whose song You Say is doing very, very well on the charts. Her new album, Look Up Child, is coming out also on September 7th. And then Unspoken is putting out a new EP that Friday as well. And then looking up the following Friday, September 14th, Blanca from Group One Crew is putting out Shattered. And Zach Williams is putting out a live project. I didn't realize this. He's involved in prison ministry and has been doing that for several years now. He recorded a live album in Harding Prison in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
So he's doing a live album. It's got a couple acoustic tracks on it, and a lot of them are
That's really cool. Hits. He's got some smash hits right now.
Yeah.
Of course, with Chainbreaker, Come to the Table.
Old Church Choir.
Oh, yeah.
And like Fear is a Liar.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's cool seeing, I know a few Christian artists that do that, and it's really neat to see their stories. Stephen Curtis Chapman actually started his music ministry shadowing a pastor who would go to prisons and work with the inmates.
That's awesome.
And then he'd just start playing songs for people.
Yeah.
So, when you look at the power of music.
It's an important ministry, man. Those in prison, like, they must feel forgotten.
Yeah.
You know? And you want them to remember that they're still loved children of God, no matter what they did. And that's something that we need to remember, too.
Yeah.
That we can't just assume that everyone in prison is just worthless.
Yeah.
Because they're not. Not in God's eyes. They shouldn't be in our eyes either.
Right.
No matter what they did. That's the thing. Christ forgives, mm-hmm. you know, the worst of sins.
Right.
Which is sometimes really the hardest thing to come across, mm-hmm. you know. There's this old Christian movie called The Encounter. And it's like Jesus comes down to this diner. And this one woman is shouting at him when she realizes it's Christ. Because he comes down and just looks like a normal person. Doesn't have the beard and the...
Yeah.
the glowing aura.
Right.
And she's just shouting at him, like, how could you forgive this man who hurt me?
Yeah.
Jesus is like, I forgive all that come to me.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing to remember, is that they are forgiven if they are repentant.
Right. I mean, that's why I love that scene on the cross during his passion when the criminal next to him says, please remember me when you go into your kingdom. And he says, you will join me in paradise.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who actually did wrong things and committed crimes. But on the inch of death, he was saved.
Absolutely. It's amazing.
And then we have one more album release coming out soon. It's going for pre-order tonight. Tori Kelly, who's a pop singer, has actually just announced that she's releasing a gospel project. And she her new single is going to feature Kirk Franklin, and she also works with Lecrae and
a
few other artists. So that'll be going up for pre-order tonight on iTunes and other digital music stores. It's called Never Alone.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. It's Bibble time.
Bibble time.
So, gospel today, for those of you who like to read along.
I'm reading along.
Matthew 22, 1 through 14. Jesus again, in reply, spoke to the chief priests and elders of the people in parables. The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time, he sent other servants, saying, tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet. My calves and fattened cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast. Some ignored the invitation and went away. One to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged, sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, burned their cities. Then the king said to his servants, the feast is ready, But those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out, therefore, in the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find. The servants went out into the streets, gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet his guests, he saw a man there, not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, "My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?" But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, "Bind his hands and his feet and cast him into darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Wow.
That is one of the more captivating gospel readings I think I've heard in church, you know, where you're just trying to take that all in.
And there's so much.
Yeah.
Where the kingdom of heaven is like a king having a wedding feast. And that end part where it's like, how are you not in a wedding garment? So it's like you came here unclean.
Right. Unprepared.
Unprepared, unrepentant. Mm-hmm. And so you're not welcome here. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that you're not dressed properly.
Right.
You know?
You're not wearing the right Christian t-shirt.
But saying like you didn't come here ready.
Right.
You know? And the other part where it's like,
he invited the other people and they didn't show up.
Yeah, yeah.
The second time they were rude, you know?
Yeah, and killed the servants.
Yeah.
Which is just like the shunning of the angels coming down, you know? Mm-hmm. And to just be like, the people, there's got to be so many people who God is speaking to and they're just not hearing his voice and just like, no, I'm not good enough for that or whatever.
Yeah.
Just for whatever reason, ignoring God's word. And it's like, the kingdom of heaven. And when, you know, you have friends struggling with sin, whatever that sin is, you worry about their soul. Mm-hmm. And you worry about their true ignorance to God, mm-hmm. you know? There's so many people that we
right.
both know that are just, you know, agnostic, whatever mm-hmm. word you want to use, that have no faith in God.
Yeah.
And it's like, God is so real and God is so there, but you're ignoring him. Mm-hmm. You're shunning him from your life and putting so much value in what we have here on earth. And it's just like, it makes you worry for their soul. And you just continue to pray for them. It's just, you know, it's so much in here. It's back to the mashing of teeth, by
yeah.
the way. I feel like last month we had the same thing, didn't we?
Yeah.
But it's just so, you know, I also think about the fact that he just go out and tell all that are welcome,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he went out into the streets and found
right.
people.
Yeah.
And they all came. And even in that group of people, there was only one who was not ready.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, even in the just people off of the main street in the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was only one who was unworthy mm-hmm. of being there. So that's also something cool that I got from that as well.
Absolutely.
Sorry. Pull up.
Transition.
So St. Philip Benizi of Florence, Italy.
Nice.
He actually was a doctor. He actually practiced medicine for a while. He died in 1279, something like that. But he practiced medicine, and then he actually joined an order.
Mm.
So he was actually became a cardinal. He was a priest and then a cardinal, and he did a lot and became like just really an amazing preacher, dedicating his life to our faith. mm-hmm. you know? And so, so much so that when he, after he died in 1671, he became a saint. He was canonized in 1671, and he was supposed to be a successor to a pope, but I believe he passed away before that. But there's a lot. There's a lot to him. And it's just really cool to kind of, like, see someone like this who just... He had, like, you know, just a normal, everyday job. An yeah. important one, doctor. Back then, that's, like, mm-hmm. you know, real muckety-muck stuff. Yeah, like
pretty high esteem.
High esteem. And he heard the calling and said, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. So, St. Philip Benizi... Kind of a really cool story when you think about the fact that he gave up so much materialism to dedicate himself to his church.
It's kind of like the fishermen, you know, leaving their nets behind and
yeah.
following Jesus.
Yep.
Very good.
So,
news of the weird. So, we played this game at, I think it was a 10th grade retreat, a couple times.
Okay.
You know that game where you have... people line up, and then they go on a platform, and they swing to the other platform on the rope swing.
Oh, yes.
And then yep. you have to see how... You've got to try to get everyone on the team on that one small platform.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So this story kind of reminds me of this. This comes from Germany. And apparently, a German firm got to break a Guinness Book of World Record for the amount of people on a raft.
Like, what size is this raft?
So I read into it. Apparently, they ended up using wooden planks, poles, rope, and rubber rings to construct a series of rafts that were then combined into a single raft.
Oh.
They got 956 people onto said raft.
Wow. Not 956.
Yeah.
So was there, like, a time period that they had to do all of this, or was it...
So it doesn't look like there was a time limit. It was just a number of people. And apparently the last time this record was made was back in 2014 when 512 people.
Wow, that's...
So it was almost double.
That's a ridiculous number to go yeah. beyond it. But that in this, like, wooden planks, poles, ropes. Right.
And this does nothing for the people listening to the podcast, but here's a yeah, picture of the crowd.
That's ridiculous.
That almost looks like the Manchester Road Race.
Well, yeah, and it's just, it's so big. So it's like a yeah. bunch of rubber inner tubes and a bunch of people standing on
right.
it.
Right, and it's all connected.
And there's like a bunch of volunteers blowing up inner tubes.
That looks like tires.
So, yeah, so they got all this stuff. They got, that's, how long do you think that took?
I don't know.
More than five minutes. But what do you get? Like, what do you get to say? I was in that crowd of 956 people.
I'm in the book.
Well, I heard recently of a person trying to break, like, the clothespins on the face thing.
Oh.
And he got, like, you know, 30 into it and was like, I totally misjudged this. The record's like 145.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How big are the paper clips? You
know, how big pins? Is the person's face?
Yeah, there you go. Did he have a beard like you and was just clipping him out of the beard?
That's the question. Does the beard count? Because I might be in this. I might be in this. All right. But anyway, that music, as always, means it's time to wrap up this episode of the podcast.
Thank goodness.
we're losing it. So thankful for all you guys who follow along, listen to us, support us, and really appreciate it. If you have anything that you want to share with us, email us, tweet us, Instagram us. Shoot us a message in the comments of the Facebook video. It's just awesome, the support that we've seen. We love that you guys listen. Very, very grateful. So, unless you got anything to add.
No. You did a good job.
All right. Awesome. But as always, I'm Steve Patera, joined by my good friend,
Evan Shaw Mumford.
Thanks for listening. Keep smiling, and God bless.